Welcome to the Dark Mark Show. It's the lighter side of the dark side. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And what a show we got tonight. It's going to be amazing.
Meow.
I've got my co-host there, Josie Cat. Josie, you want to say hello to the Dark Minions out there?
Hello, Dark Minions.
We've got a great show tonight. This is going to be fantastic. We've got an extra guest tonight, I see. Nomi's here.
Yeah.
And we have legends. We have superstars. We have some of the most fascinating people in L.A. here. And Josie's here. But we have...
Fuck you, Mark.
We have a legend in the studio. We have... if you're a big Ramones fan like I am, you know him. He drummed on the albums Animal Boy, Too Tough to Die, Halfway to Sanity, drummed 500 shows with him. If you're a Ramones fan like Josie Cat, you're like, oh, wow, Marky Ramone's coming on the show. But no, not Marky Ramone.
Richie, I did not say that.
I got the text right here. Richie Ramone is on the show.
And
Richie
Ramone, yeah, what's going on, man?
He's got a great new album. It's called Entitled, and we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. And next to you, Richie, one of the most fascinating people in L.A., I would say. It's hard to encapsulate everything you do in, like, a sentence. I'm trying to explain to people
who you are. That's why I like that the L.A. Weekly said P.T. Barnum with boobs, which I thought was really cool because that was, like, fair. It's a little bit of everything.
I did notice you do have boobs. That is true. P.T. Barnum with boobs. People compared you to Jessica Rabbit. I think you're the 21st century Andy Warhol, to be honest with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of pop art in there.
Lenora Claire. And we've got so much to talk about. I've been, as Josie will tell you, when I have beautiful female guests on, I do a lot of research.
A lot of research.
A big Ramones fan. So I did a lot of research for the show. But let me do No Hollywood Report, but I'm going to do the sponsors really quick because we got so much to talk about with both of you. Doomy's Home Cooking has Sunday brunch back. And Phil Doomy said to say hi to you.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He's great. The food is fantastic. You know that. It's vegan food. You would never know it's vegan. It's amazing. Uh-huh. It's just delicious food that just happens to be vegan. They're doing the Sunday brunch. I went to the Sunday brunch this Sunday. It was delicious. $4 mimosas, $15 all you can eat. They're open till 3 o'clock on Friday and Saturday. If you're in L.A. or you're visiting L.A., just go to Doomy's Home Cooking. I'm trying to find the address here. I should have this memorized by now. 1253 Vine Street, Hollywood, California, 90038. Doomy's Home Cooking if you're ever in L.A. Also, go to darkmarkshow.com. Because we have two sponsors, Audible.com. Audible.com, you can get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at Audible.com. They have punk rock Blitzkrieg, My Life as a Ramone. That's Marky Ramone. We don't want to talk about that. But they have, well, if you're interested in Ramone, why not? Check it out. You get it free, why not? So they've also got whatever you want. 50 Shades of Grey, you want to get into that. Whatever you want to get into, Stephen King books. Kelsey Handler's autobiography.
I hope it's better than the book.
Really?
The audio.
Did the book bored you?
I did better stuff in 1 week than that whole entire book. I couldn't finish it. It was so bad.
Well, why don't you write the 50 Shades of Josie? That may be good.
It might be more than 50 Shades.
But if somebody wants to see what the fuss is about, they don't want to pay for it, go to darkmarkshow.com, click on the Audible link, sign up with your Amazon account. Yeah, and then whatever. And then you got it made. Also, stamps.com. We got stamps.com, which has been a sponsor for a couple months. Josie had no idea. But if you go on stamps.com, there's a little stamps.com. If you go to darkmarkshow.com, right to next to my smiling face, I'm doing it so fast, nobody's even going to do this. But click on stamps.com, you get a $100 free trial. You get a scale, you get free postage.
Hey, you know what you could do with those scales.
We know about scales. But you get free postage. You don't have to wait in line at the post office. Just print postage on your computer, put them on your packages, put them on your envelopes. Throw them in the mailbox. You don't never have to go to the post office again. Just go to stamps.com.
Scales, weed.
Those letters we write. I think Richie
Ramone, you're part of the Ramones. Now, I found a lot of love. I actually researched Richie in a different way than I did research for Lenore. But you were a child prodigy, is what I read.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. You were touring when you were seven.
No, not seven.
Well, you were a professional musician when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I was playing live like 10, 11, yeah.
Okay, so you were playing live at 10 and 11. Yeah. I mean, what were you playing, though?
Mm-hmm. I was playing like in the Catskills for all the comedians up there in New York, you know where the Catskills are.
So you were like doing the rim shots at 10?
No, I was playing with a band, reading charts and everything.
Oh, okay.
My older brother was in a band, and so I played with him. You know, he was like 6 years older than me, so I was like 6 years ahead of my time. So when I was like 9, I was really 15.
Right.
And so, I played weddings and bar mitzvahs. I was the type of kid that didn't have to work at Burger King because
your drumming was always so good that you could always get a job.
Yeah, well, I started at 5. I've been playing 50 years now.
Wow. And here you are on the Dark Mark Show. So yeah. it's a long journey right here to Skid Row Studios. But I also read that when you auditioned for the Ramones, and the Ramones, if people don't know, and if you're listening to the show, I don't know but Tommy Ramone was the original drummer.
Correct.
And then Marky Ramone took over, I think, the third or fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marky apparently had a drinking problem and was too...
Like musicians do now and then.
Right, so it was a little too fucked up for the Ramones. And then you auditioned, but you didn't have any Ramones records when you auditioned.
No, I wasn't, It's funny, like, I never had a poster on my wall. I wasn't really, a fan of anybody, really. I listened to everything as a kid,
Right.
And so I never really had, Ramones poster or anything like that.
But you were
jazz trained? Yeah,
I did a lot of, I studied, 5 years old, I had a teacher, I read music and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
But I saw the Ramones and stuff live and everything.
Right, you were in New York when the punk scene broke.
No, a little later.
Okay.
I really didn't get on that scene until 79, 80. I was a lot younger than them.
And what did you think when you got there?
Huh? Oh,
when you saw
fabulous.
Ramones live?
Oh, yeah. I saw them actually in New Jersey, when I was in high school. I snuck in and took some friends. It was kind of weird because, you were listening to arena rock then. And
right.
But, I really dug it. So.
Right. So, and you snuck in so that, had very punk rock.
Yeah.
But you had to borrow somebody's Ramones records to actually get the...
No, the label gave me some.
Okay.
To learn.
So was it the label that got you the audition, or?
No, it's funny. I was, I used to hang out, the Shirts were a band, with Andy Golden. Now, if you remember the Shirts, they played CBGBs, and they had a house in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
3-story house, just a party house, 24 hours. They had a recording studio, and everybody would hang there.
Right.
And then the roadie, Little Matt, was, he was shooting up in the corner, and he said, "Oh, I got to go now." And I said, "Where are you going?" He says, "Well, the Ramones are auditioning drummers." I said, "Well, put my name in the hat." And that's just how it happened. The road manager called me, and I went down there.
Did you say he was shooting up in the corner?
He was shooting up in the corner, yeah. And then
he's multitasking. Yeah, I got the audition.
Yeah.
Up in the corner, and then
in and out,
right.
The blood in and out. It's like, "Oh, Matt, come on." And then he went, and then I got the call. So being in the right place at the right time worked. It was really weird. I was like...
And see, people say don't hang out with junkies.
Right.
Make sure that you just wake him up and say, "Put my name in the hat, and there you go. You could be a Ramon."
He was a part-time junkie.
Yeah. And when you joined the band, I think the was it Subterranean Jungle was recorded, but...
It was just finished, yeah. And so that's why that cover, you see... They knew they were getting rid of Marky, so they put him in the window. They didn't put him in where the doors open.
They're on a subway, and he's in the window, and they're in the doorway.
Right.
And so you were in the videos, and you were on that tour.
Yeah, the first thing we did is came to L.A. and shot Psychotherapy here in Los Angeles.
Right.
Before I even played a show, we did that.
Right. And your first show with the Ramones, how'd the crowd take to it?
Well, Ramones fans are very... particular, and I think, it took a little time for me to grow on them. It wasn't like, right away they were like, ooh and ah,
right.
So it took a while,
but
to get their respect.
Did you detect some animosity in the crowd, or did you just do a new drama and you didn't really care?
Maybe a little animosity, sure.
Right.
Like, who's this fuckhead, where's Marky?
Right.
But that all changed, as I started writing and singing and everything.
The junkies in the crowd are like, "Where's Tommy?" But anyway, Lenora Claire, I was telling Rich about Lenora Claire. There's so many things that you do that I don't know where to start. But, obviously, L.A. Weekly said you were one of the most fascinating people in L.A. And I remember somebody told me, it was a few years ago, and this happens a lot. People tell me about somebody, and then I meet them, right afterwards. So that's what happened. One of my friends like, "You ever seen Lenora Claire?" And I saw your picture, and I think I had the same reaction everybody does when they see you. It was like, wow.
And then
I saw you. This is basically what kind of broke you nationwide and really got you a lot of attention was the Golden Gals Gone Wild exhibit.
Right. Yeah.
And
that was fun. I was there.
That was kind of major.
I thought it was Golden Girls Gone Wild, but apparently with the copyright.
Yeah, I had to be careful. That was funny. It wasn't Disney Touchstone that came after me with the Golden Girls thing. It was actually Girls Gone Wild. I got a letter from that horrible douchebag when he was in jail. He sent me a letter.
Wasn't he in jail?
No, Joe Francis was in jail.
Nothing there to do.
Yeah, and he sent me a letter, and I was like, and he's like, I'm going to send you a cease and desist. I'm going to see you. I was like, please do. I would love that press. Because, you know, TMZ and NPR are not enough press. Like, let's keep this going.
Absolutely.
And the fact that I was like, really, like, bring it on, like, to actually terrified him, so nothing ever happened. But yeah, no, that was a big show. It was really funny. I did it, and like within an hour of announcing it, like TMZ, NPR, National, it just blew up, and it was such a great experience.
And describe to Richie what that was, because we were there.
Sure. Yeah. It was, well, I commissioned 40 artists to do erotic interpretations of the Golden Girls. It was everything from like Golden Shower Girls to just like B. Arthur. It was incredible. And like
B. Arthur with a whip.
Yeah, it was really fabulous. And like literally I was in like National Enquirer. It was everywhere, CNN news scroll, all over my like stupid idea. So, and I ended up bringing it to a second museum, the World Erotic Museum in Miami. Now, this was really fabulous. When I got there, there was a ton of senior swingers who were waiting for me. Like my version of being like the Beatles or whatever. Like no one ever was going to wait for me at the airport, but the senior swingers did.
All these guys with walkers and hard-ons, yeah, like, you know, I've been waiting for you my whole life.
Yeah, they're like, you validate our movement, whatever. So they took me back to the museum, and you know, my family are like Jewish New Yorkers. I grew up here, so you know, as you do, they moved to Florida, right? So this was like my version of my grandparents, essentially. So there's all these like, you know, bubbies there, and they had out this amazing like lox cream cheese and bagel spread, and then they all got nude. I was just in this room going like, I've clearly done something right in my life when this is what I'm doing today.
So, I don't even want to know where the cream cheese went.
It's just that show is really fun. It's taking me a lot of strange places. But I've done other shows.
Don't
like
eat the bagels.
Yeah, it was crazy. When Betty Page passed away, her estate approached me, and I curated a show in her honor, which was great because I got to bring like Olivia's art and just really honor Betty properly. I think you were at that show.
I was at that one.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I think I was at that one too.
Yeah, it was great. And actually, I'm working on another show right now. It's going to be called Put a Lid on It, and it's all art on toilet seat lids. And I'm going to build actual what I call art installations, which will be actual bathroom stalls. And so, because my whole thing is the idea of practical art, like why is it that art has to be something sacred on the wall?
Right.
And not something like why do we all these boring uniform white toilets when we could have something really fabulous and special? So
right. Are you going to be selling the toilet lids?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Oh
wow. So where's your head that you think of all this stuff?
I mean, really weird place. I always say my dad was a urologist and then a psychiatrist, so my childhood was nuts, I think that that explains a lot of what I'm doing. And I'm also directing my first documentary now.
I'm going to get to that. We'll get to that. I got it all. Don't worry about it. But you're always stylish, and you're like a throwback. You're curvy.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And you know, I was telling Richie. I mean, the girls are getting more anorexic, and
I know.
But I mean, I like the curves. I like, but what's
well,
me?
There you go. You got this whole
lot. Trust me. You don't want to know what's happening under the desk, but I wish. So something's happening under the desk, but. I was telling a couple people today. When Marilyn Monroe, Betty Page, Russ Meyer movies, you see the girls are they're sucking in their gut. They have a little pooch, but they're the most beautiful women I've ever seen. Yeah. I love the curves. I love the big. I don't know. Is it just me? And we've kind of lost that.
I don't think it's just you. I mean, I think people respond to it as well. I mean, the thing is about fashion is made to be like a walking coat hanger, and the women aren't actually supposed to be sexual. They're supposed to be, you know, showing off the fashion. So high fashion is very slim build, but if you really ask most men what they prefer, I think it is a curvier
body. Want an ass and some tits to grab on. Yeah.
But
what do you think about that?
I prefer the brain.
The brain.
That's a good answer.
Good job.
But you guys.
Brain fucking someone is a whole different story.
You brain fucked me a couple times, but you guys are sort of. I mean, you're on the cutting edge of news because I saw today. Apparently, there's some old nude pictures of Betty White that came out.
Yeah, you know, that's actually kind of old news. They've been around before, but it's every couple of years people find them again and are like, oh my goodness. But she did pinups. And what's funny is the woman who played Blanche, who's supposed to be the saucy one, their roles were reversed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was just a few days before the Rose and the Blanche roles were reversed.
Oh, okay.
Betty did tons of, she did amazing news. I don't know which one came out this time. Was the one with the earmuffs? Was that the one?
I didn't see them, but
there's a ton of nude Betty White.
What, now
out there.
Photos in her 90s?
No, no, from the photograph the '40s.
Trust me, Lenore's are trying to get her to pose. You would
that's
love that.
She loves it. Grannies.com.
Yeah.
No, she knows about the show. Right. She has one of the posters, right. So she was actually really supportive of it. So,
speaking of something that's been out for a long time, but it's just getting traction now, is the Bill Cosby thing, which leads me to the song that you wrote for the Ramones that is a classic. It's on every greatest hits. They even played it on their last show. Was somebody put something in my drink?
Right. Yeah. Right.
And tell us briefly the story behind that. I've got an idea.
That was written about Bill Cosby.
Really? You hang out with Bill Cosby?
Did he put something in your drink?
No. I'm over here, Richie. I'm gonna put something in your drink.
When I first moved to the East Village, we had no money. I was a kid, and we'd go to the clubs, and when people got up to dance, we'd steal the drinks.
Right.
So that's how we got the drink for free. And
so you're sneaking in the clubs, you're stealing people's drinks.
Yeah, and then one night one was laced with something. So
wow.
That's how that song came about.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really good. I didn't have to steal any more drinks.
Bonus drink.
So it was acid, I think?
Or
who knows, but wow.
But it was hallucinogenic, but the weird thing about that is it's different if you know you're taking it.
Right.
But if you don't know, you start to get weird, like, what's happening to me? And then you realize maybe, an hour later, that's what it must be.
And that became a staple, and so much so that even on the Ramones' last show, which you weren't on, every other Ramone was there.
Right.
They played it.
Mm-hmm.
Were you invited to the last show?
It's good.
Were you invited to the last show?
Mm-mm. No. I mean, I could have went.
Right. Because Dee Dee was there, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if Tommy was there, but...
We were kind of strained at that point.
Right.
So.
I mean, just...
Is that how you say that word?
Yeah. Well,
you can say whatever you want. Say fucks.
I mean,
we
drummed on Too Tough to Die, which I think most people say was the really last great Ramones record.
Right.
Animal Boy, which is good, and Halfway to Sandy. And then what happened?
What do you mean?
How did you leave the band?
Well, there was, I wanted some more stuff. I was still a punk kid, 29, and, there was a lot of stuff going on with, I wanted some T-shirt money, and shit like that. And
because they were selling T-shirts like this that had Richie on it.
Yeah, well, they had some of my photo and everything, and it was like, okay, I've been here 5 years. Let's,
So they were selling T-shirts that had your picture on it and you got nothing.
Yeah.
That always happens to the drummer. My father's a drummer. My brother is. I dated the main drummer for the Cramps.
Right.
Name dropper.
It was like he didn't get any of the merch. And I don't want to speak ill of, Lux and Ivy. I love them. But
they didn't pay your ex-boyfriend.
None of the drummers got paid, ever.
And if they did, maybe you'd still be together.
But, it was that and, it was just, that was our last record on Sire. So we had no more label deal and, with Sire, we were getting big advances,
Because the story I heard was that you were...
Did you read that or you heard it?
This is what I heard and I read. First off, I read that you and Joey got along great.
Yeah, and Dee Dee.
You and Dee Dee got along great. You actually played drums and helped produce his first rap single.
Mm-hmm.
Which Josie didn't even know he did a rap single.
Right.
He did a whole rap album.
Funky Man.
Stayed away from that.
Dee Dee King, Funky Man.
Right.
Yeah.
And so...
Yikes.
So, it's not bad. It's all right. It's like Beastie Boys. It was like the Beastie Boys sort of sounded like that.
The Beastie Boys used to be a punk rock band.
Right. That's right. So it sort of sounded like that.
Boot boy band.
Right.
With a girl drummer. Mm-hmm. It was fabulous.
So it didn't sound like Drake or Kanye West. It was sort of like in that vein of License to Ill. But
he was Dee Dee King, and Dee Dee called me Broadway.
You were that Broadway. That was your rap name.
Yeah.
Broadway Rich or just Broadway?
That's Broadway.
So what I read was that you said because. Halfway to Sandy was coming out.
Right.
And you said, and they were doing two shows in New York, for MTV and the whole press. And you said, I want $500 for each show or I'm leaving.
No, I don't remember saying that.
I should have brought the book. I have the book at home, but that's what it says.
Whose book?
There was a book, Ramones. It came out like in the mid-90s. I should have brought it, but you were not interviewed in it. Dee Dee was not interviewed in it, but.
They say a lot of things,
And
I wouldn't quit for $500.
Well, yes, $1,000 for two shows. But they said because they didn't have any pictures of you in the book, which is weird. But they had a picture of...
No, after I left, they didn't even put me on the website. It was really weird. The kids don't know I wasn't in that band for 5 years,
And they replaced you for those shows with Clem Burke from Blondie.
Right.
Who was called himself Elvis Ramone.
Right.
And who apparently was so bad.
Right.
And I'm not sure how, because he's a good drummer.
He's a good drummer. I mean,
Clem's a great pop drummer and everything like that. But the Ramones is an athletic test. It's not, you know, it's just,
Did it stretch you musically? Because you're jazz trained, you're classically trained.
Yeah, well, it's all about, you know, the right hand playing, you know, the eighth notes, you know. And so I used to practice on a pillow.
Very timing based. I would say I'm not a drummer, but, you know.
No, it's the right hand going, you know, playing that right hand fast. I would practice on a pillow so, you know, it wouldn't bounce back. And that's how I developed my wrist.
But that's a whole different story.
So a lot of drummers don't play that beat, which is kind of weird. So, you know, everything today, they use two bass drums and it's so annoying to hear
that.
Right.
You know. So
you could thank Nu Metal for that.
Yeah, I guess so.
In the 90s.
And then so then Marky replaced him, and then they kept going. But and I was telling you about Marky, and is there a beef between you and Marky? Do you guys?
There's no beef, but I think the only thing I said to him was, "Hey, that's it." And all that time, I think after when I got in the band, then he was playing with Richie Stotts from the Plasmatics. They had some band. And I went there and with Joey, but we never did nothing. I went to the Grammy Awards.
I was just going to ask you if you went to the Grammys.
And we were on the red carpet, and we wanted a picture of me, Tommy, and Marky.
Right.
He ran away, you know. Yeah, he's just got an in. There's just something going on, I guess, because I, you know. You know, people talk about his wig all the time, so maybe I must have.
I actually heard that today.
Right. That's
I'm not going to say you said something, but I was.
Maybe I said something at one point, but, you know.
It's not like you're going to pull off his wig or anything.
I wasn't going to pull it off.
After Kim's.
Yeah, because Ramones were honored for a Lifetime Achievement Award, and that was the first time you, Tommy, and Marky were in the same room at the same time.
Right, yeah.
And Ramones were not inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you weren't.
No, he always was able to sneak in there, you know. And that's kind of weird, because either you take everybody who was in the band, or you just take the original four, you know. So he always got in there.
Does it bother you, or do you really?
No, it doesn't bother me.
You could have pulled a Frank, you know, probably not Frankie Afonte.
Right. Yeah.
He's a good old friend of mine. When. Did you see what happened during the Blondie Award induction? Oh, he went off. He went off because they were using like younger players, and he didn't get invited to play. You know, Clem got to. But.
He bummed rushed the stage and said, "Can the original band play?" And Debbie Harry's like, "No."
I mean, it's just wrong.
You just have to
put put it aside just for that thing,
right?
You know, so you have to be bigger than that. You know, so I don't.
Yeah.
You know.
But
so where did you film your new video? That was here in LA, right?
Yeah.
It looked Second Street Bridge.
Yeah, I did the Second Street Bridge and Hollywood Boulevard and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. That actually is a great segue, Josie, because we're going to play, if we have it, the title track to the new album entitled. Let's hear a little bit of that.
All right.
Yeah, why not?
Now I'm in charge.
Yeah. That's entitled the title track. What are you entitled to? What are you entitled to, Richie? What is that all about?
It's not just what I'm entitled. You know, I mean, I think the kids, everyone's entitled to more and a better life. You know, we're in
happiness.
A time. Yeah, we're in a time that's, you know, kind of tough right now. And, you know, people who can't get jobs, you know. My thing is, man, it would be a really cool world if what you did the best you got to work at.
Right.
You know, and you took, you know, okay, you're great at this, you're great at that. And
right.
You know, I think we're all just entitled now to, you know,
right.
do better. You
well,
know?
And we were talking about your band, and right. you have a great bass player, Claire Mistake.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she, when you guys were, we were talking because you, I figured you knew Kim Fowley.
Oh, yeah, I knew him really well.
Because you guys sort of, I mean, Josie's kind of the same way. You guys sort of enter a room.
I was very good friends with Kim. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, the three of you are very similar in that you enter a room and the whole room circles around you.
Well, he was, you know, he was such an incredible person. And that's like the one thing that's really kind of comforting was looking back at his life. Is he had 75 unbelievable, colorful, crazy years.
Absolutely.
So even though it's always, you know, painful when you lose somebody, at least you can look at his life and go, Jesus, he did not waste a second of it, you know.
He
really, really went for it. So.
The one thing I loved about Kim was I could always tell when he was about to say something terribly inappropriate,
right.
because which was all the time. Yeah. He would start to crack a little grin in the corner of his cheek, right. and I would point at him, and then he'd start laughing because he knew I knew that he was going to go there.
Right.
But I'd always tangle right. with him because you know my dad had a mouth like a biker, and I right. you know I've been
go figure
I was singing in a punk band, right. you know, around a lot of foul-mouthed people, it was nothing. It was hanging around with a grandpa, you know, with a dirty mouth.
Telling. Well, almost like the marathon. I mean, I used to call it the K-hole because it would be like an 8-hour phone conversation if he got you on the phone.
Right.
But I miss when he would call me at 3 a.m. and be like, where's the party at? I'd be like, you're 70. Go home.
Right.
Go home.
No, he was always out.
What do you do? What is the thing? I mean, the last couple of years, obviously, right. he was sick. But even I would say up until about 70, he was where's the party at?
He'd be walking to fetish clubs with a cane. I remember.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, it was great though.
Speaking of inappropriate, I was very surprised in my research. You were in Showgirls too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There was a Showgirls too. I had no idea.
Yeah, it was the girl who played Penny, Rena Riffle, who has a distinction of being not only in Showgirls but Striptease.
Wow.
She did both. And she decided that the sequel should happen. And she was not only going to star in it, but write it because everyone's dying, you know, Penny's story.
Right.
So it follows her. And so she asked me if I'd play a goth stripper. So I just said, sure. And, you know, it was a funny couple of days.
And you're interviewing people now, or you have a web series where you interview people at Donut Shop?
Oh, yeah, I did a couple of years ago. Yeah. Well, I really love to interview paranoid schizophrenics, conspiracy theorists, and donut shops are a hotbed for that because they're kicked out of the bars. They're 24 hours. They're hopped up on sugar and caffeine.
Right.
And it's just every weirdo late in the middle of the night. So I was like, great, I'll just go up and interview them and find their story.
You don't eat donuts.
No, but it's not about.
She's interviewing people about fart jokes.
We're gonna get to that. Okay, we'll talk about the fart jokes.
Yeah,
I was
sure.
trying to save this to the end because I got to segue this into a Richie thing. But you are doing a documentary about fart jokes.
I am, but you know what? I have to be perfectly honest. It's actually about the history of the fart joke, which is fascinating. The very first joke ever in recorded history goes all the way back to ancient Sumerian culture, and it was a fart joke. It was women would run into their husband's lap, sit down, fart, and run away. That's the beginning of recorded civilization. It goes the fart joke, and the reason why I wanted to do this documentary is because farts the great equalizer. Everybody mm-hmm. finds them funny, regardless of class, race, religion, status. It's the one thing. It really translates across the board.
Well,
so
you're such a beautiful girl. I can't even imagine that you fart.
No, it's not about me, but that's what's so funny is everybody, I just interviewed Bobcat Goldthwait.
Right,
real comedians.
Yeah, really. And what's funny is I walk up to these people and I don't know what they think. And I was like, hey, can we talk about farts? And they're like, I signed up for it. And so
it's a great concept. It's one I wish I would have thought of. After the aristocrats, this is the next thing.
But I actually have to legitimize it. Like I have a Harvard sociologist. I have professors coming in.
What other comedians did you interview besides Bobcat?
Well, Bobcat I just started Monday filming it. I literally within 2 weeks of conceiving of the idea, got backing and started shooting. It's gone rapidly.
It's amazing. I mean, you just think in the last 40 years, Blazing Saddles was a trailblazer. Huh?
I didn't want to announce that, but Well, I just want to keep that under wraps, but I may have some fart legends. Yes,
right. But now, like every children's movie has a fart joke, or else kids won't watch it.
It does, but it was great when I had Bobcat on. I don't know if you're familiar with Le Petitmain, but he was the classic fartist of the Moulin Rouge, and he would fart with an orchestra to music, and he was literally the toast of the Moulin Rouge. Like all of Parisian society would come out to see him, and so we have great farts through history, and you know, I really dignify it to the best of my ability.
Wow. Yeah. Is there another fart from history that you could share with our audience?
What about like a royal fart or something like that?
Oh, well, you know what? That's funny that you said. I found like even there's like political fart stories. Like apparently George Bush had like names for everybody in his cabinet and they were all just like shit and fart related. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually it was Jello Biafra who told me that. So it's
oh,
it,
wow.
It's all stuff is coming out of the woodwork. It's really funny.
Like so will you get Jello to tell the story again? I just had dinner with him the other day.
Actually, I'd love to because I was at dinner with him telling him, he's like, what are you up to, weirdo? You know, and I was telling him and because he's so political.
You're
he's
with
like,
your iPhone. Okay, tell that story one more time.
Well, that's what's so great about it is just like literally everyone I've spoken to has some story, some
anecdote. So what's your story?
I don't have fart stories.
Which fart was the smelliest?
Huh?
Do you have any tour fart stories? Someone that would stink up a bus?
No one would admit who farted.
There you go. There's your fart story.
I would think Dee Dee's would be the smelliest because of the drug use, but...
No, I don't know.
Probably Joey's would be the loudest, I would think.
I don't know.
Yeah, sorry.
Joey was two rows in front of me. See, we traveled in a van a lot, so I was in the last row, and Joey was in.
The silent farts on tour.
Josie's let out a couple of cheek sneaks on the show. I don't remember many farts though.
I don't remember that.
Really?
You know?
Oh, okay. They must have.
We weren't farters.
Really, the Rones were not farters.
No.
You heard it here first.
No. Yeah. Now we know. R.E.O. Speedwagon, big farters. That's what I hear. But Ramones, no. But that's great. That's great. So I you got me fascinated already. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, it's like I really like to take absurdist, you know, subject matters and treat it seriously. That's like my favorite thing to do. So that's what I'm doing with this.
Right, right. And it's funny that you should mention Symphony Orchestra because Richie Ramone, you composed a piece for the Pasadena Pops.
Yeah, I arranged a West Side Story piece, yeah.
It was based on West Side Story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a classical piece. And so you performed as part of the Pasadena Pops.
Right.
And they would take, at the end of the concert, they would take your drum kit out and you would drum along with the symphony orchestra.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you were telling me about the reaction of the Pops crowd.
No, it was great. I mean, you know, I remember the sound man said he hadn't seen a reaction like that in 7 years. The people just went crazy. It brought back like the Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich era.
You got to see this.
I'm looking at it. Don't worry about it. But you said one of the violinists
this
refused
little dog
to play?
Knows where the pillows are.
Wow.
Nomi's a smart dog.
Yeah, there was one violin player. He walked off during my performance because he didn't think that was cool, drum set on the stage. So, and then the last night he stayed because we were getting such rave reviews.
And that's amazing. And you also played with Fred Schneider, the B-52s.
I didn't play with him. I co-wrote a song for him on his solo record, yeah, called Orbit.
Okay.
He seems like he'd be a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah, he was, you know.
I thought
he seems like he'd have a good, like, funny personality.
Yeah.
No comment. Okay, never mind.
I mean, you know.
Any Fred Schneider fart stories?
Yeah, the Ramones played.
There's a monster in my pants.
I mean, we played a lot with the B-52s in the 80s.
Right, yeah. Right. He was a member of the
B-52s. We did a lot of shows, yeah. So.
Did you drum with the B-52s?
No.
Oh, okay.
But they would open up for us a lot.
Oh, the Ramones would awesome. Do
yeah.
shows with the B-52s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that
brings up a question. On your Entitled video, you're playing drums and you're singing,
right.
too. Do you do the same thing when you play live?
My second guitarist, Ben, he's my punk guitarist. So I can't see doing a show singing everything from behind the drums. So I jump out front and Ben jumps on drums.
We switch off a little bit.
Yeah, during the show a little bit. It works really well, you know. So that
And who plays bass?
Claire plays bass. Alex plays lead guitar.
Right on.
But Tommy Bolin played on the album.
Right, Tommy played on the album.
Not the guy from Deep Purple in the 70s. No. Tommy Bolin from Warlock, the metal band in the 80s. And
is it Mark Bolin's son?
No.
No?
Okay.
I had different people played on the record before. You know, live's a different ball game, you know.
And you just got back from a European tour.
Right.
And you were. I saw you were in Ireland because I just got back from Ireland. You were at the Interpol.
Was I?
I think so. It's
Scotland.
The Interpol.
I didn't go to Ireland. I thought it was in Scotland.
Interpol
that might have
something.
Been
Marky
too.
Smart, no, 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 no.
It was Richie?
Maybe Tommy.
Were you? You were there a few weeks ago, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got back last week. Okay. I saw your pictures.
Well, here's a question, Richie. Why do you think the Ramones are so popular overseas? Especially Europe, South America, Japan, but never really broke in America.
What are you talking about?
They never had a top 40 hit. They never had a top 40 album.
Well,
they're legends. They inspired every band. But
yeah, but they were playing huge shows. I mean, the shows were massive.
We never really had radio hits, no.
I mean, what I'm saying is in America, they would play, you know, they're like the last
but
show.
But they were played on the a last lot
show,
of
the, their last show was,
radio
at, the, was
shows.
At the Palace.
South America, we like the Beatles down there.
Right.
That was nuts.
I posted something about you, and somebody's like, when are you coming to South America?
The Latin communities, Spain, you know. I just played Spain. It's wild. You know, the kids there are really wild. They come out, you know, here. I don't play the States that much because it's like, you know, they come out. If you're not on the radio, they come out and they got their arms folded. They're just not. Right. I want them to really get in my face, right. You know.
Well, I mean, and there's another thing. I read there, Gene Simmons from Kiss made a big deal because he said that rock is dead.
Right.
Do you think rock is dead?
No, I mean, it's taken a back seat now. You know, it used
there's
to be
a
rock
lot of
and roll, but it's
new
taken a
kids
back seat.
In their early 20s that are getting into rock, and especially glam rock.
They keep saying the cycle goes around, but I've been waiting now. It's been 15 years, you know.
Well,
I feel bad for the kids because they just have to listen to classic rock or old stuff. It's hard, you know. The radios don't really have much rock.
They don't.
You know, they got in this groove now of the pop and the hip hop, and that's
And they're not as pure as we were growing up. You know, they'll listen
to
anything.
Come on, Josie, you were never pure.
True,
but Ramones probably get more play now than they did when they were around.
Well, after everybody died, they became more popular. So a lot more records.
Yeah.
You know, like the first album went gold finally, you know?
Wow.
After like, you know, 30 years.
But you're sitting next to the premier tastemaker. If anybody's ahead of the curve, it's Lenore Verclair. What should we be looking out for 2015? What is cool? Because you are always cool. And you're always surrounded by the coolest people.
You know, honestly, I'm in such a bubble right now working on everything. I'm not going to pretend that I know what's cool other than authenticity, just because that's an across-the-board honest answer. Just
right.
I wish I had a good answer, like, oh, this is the thing. It's like, I think everything is so erratic and unpredictable right now, and anything has a possibility to go viral if enough idiots like it, so I don't want to pretend that
have
the answer. No, I'm just saying.
Well, it's true. With the internet, anything could go viral.
That's
I mean,
this,
a cat video goes
that's
viral. It's crazy.
Cat videos are the next big thing.
I see it every day in my job. You know, I'm a reality TV casting producer. Mm-hmm. People know that I actually have like a day job and a career and stuff. And literally, I'm seeing trends because I'm finding the people that I will then, for better or for worse, make famous and then put on TV, and that's what makes things erupt. It's all very character-based. I will say that when I got in the game 4 years ago, I was like, I cast a show called Taboo on Nat Geo, and they're like, you're too taboo for taboo. My stories were too outrageous. Now, finally, things are actually catching up, which is really nice. I think people's taste level, because the internet has become so extreme, that things like, you know.
And people are more jaded.
Give me an example. What was too taboo then that would not be taboo now?
Oh, there's a million things. I interviewed a guy who has sex with dolphins. You wrote a whole book about it called The Wet Goddess.
That's kind of taboo.
Right? Like, I did it. It's not sexual.
That's only taboo. Probably hard to do.
I did a
story.
Did
he take him out of the water? Or the,
No. It was. Well, here's the funny thing. My argument with, they're like, we can't do the story. It's bestiality. And I was like, international waters. And they're like, why are you pushing the story? And I was like, because it's really interesting. And people, so, you know, there's that. And then I wanted to break a story on I know you're going to think I'm all like piss and shit jokes, but fecal transplants. Fecal transplants are an actual thing right now. They're implanting.
What?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're taking a healthy baby, right, that has like, you know, the digestive tract is like like in good shape. They're taking
like three months.
Yeah, they're taking their fecal matter and they're putting it in a pill that then dissolves and kind of opens up in the stomach. And then people who have like colitis and other, you know, stomach disorders, it kind of balances out the flora and fauna of, you know, rather than having these horrific gastrointestinal problems.
My boss has that.
Yeah, no, they're doing it. And so they're called fecal transplant. And I like knew what the story years ago and was ready to like break it on a national level. And they're like, you're gross. And I'm like, but this is an amazing, the FDA is approving this right now. So, you know.
That's like drinking your own pee. That was a big thing for a while,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, actually, Jankum.
Okay,
so Jankum is where you get high on your own supply. That's like huffing fermented urine and feces. My job is now to literally research the most bizarre shit and put it out there in the world.
Right.
So when you ask me what's, I already think everybody's weird, everybody's deviant. I've seen all this stuff, but I'll just say America's taste level for this stuff is now finally like escalating and getting really weird. So good job, America.
She's the one who brings it to you.
Yeah,
she
brings
the piss
and shit and
farts to America. I got a lot of
catching
up. She makes a living doing that. She casts reality shows.
I'm way behind the curve.
True.
You can catch up, Richie.
But you know, I'll just say this real quick to sort of like bring it. The best part of my job, though, is on the best day, I'm able to give somebody who's maybe been like misunderstood or marginalized a voice, you know, by putting them on TV. Because I look for, because I think before me in casting, especially if you're doing the offbeat characters, they would just find really terrible versions of whatever archetype, but just really poorly represented a subculture. And I try and find the most interesting and articulate version of it, you know, and be like, oh, these people are into polyamory, but here's like a really nice version of that. Or, you know, instead of being like for example, when I did Taboo, I put a Satanist on, but he was a Satanist who took care of his mother who was dying of cancer. Like, here's your friendly neighborhood Satanist. And before they would try and find just like the most horrific, you know,
granny swingers. It could be your grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
right. She knits too.
But I did that because I wanted to explore senior sexuality because seniors are getting STDs at an alarming rate.
I have a story about you know, old folks home. They have to separate the men and the women because they hook up so much.
Yeah,
right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Do they do that at your old folks home?
Oh, stop it.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
No, it's true, though, because they come from a generation that doesn't use condoms.
They don't get pregnant.
The guys take Viagra and
the women are fighting over the men. The women live longer.
Yeah.
So they're fighting over the men.
The men are taking Viagra. They don't get pregnant. They came from a generation that doesn't use condoms. So the STD rate is through the roof.
Right.
And so I wanted to, because people are so ageist, I wanted to like do a show that explored that. So I was like, so what happened was I got that painting of nude B. Arthur. I put it over my bed.
Right.
The guy I was dating at the time came in and he was like, I can't do this with you here. And I was like,
I think you might be a little queer.
Yeah, I was like, well, if you can't get down with B, you can't get down with me. You know, I was like, you gotta go.
Wow.
And you need to do t-shirts like that.
I know, it'd be good, right? And like, instead of a litmus test, I call it a titmus test, you know? And so I was like, I just realized that art's supposed to make you think and feel. So I realized I had something really powerful with that, you know?
Right.
And I wanted to explore why is it that people are so horrified if you throw out the idea of like older people having sex? I hope when I'm Kim Fowley's age, you know, I'm still.
He couldn't use it towards the end. He showed it to me. Trust me.
But I'm just saying, like he pushed it for a good long time. You know.
But, I mean, what is the fashion? Are you into older men? Are you into older women? I mean,
I just wanted to give them, you know, the legitimacy that like it's cool. Like you're older, you're still getting it. Good for you.
A healthy sex life your whole life, right?
Absolutely.
I think anything goes with this one.
But you know what? I'm really just a nice Jewish girl from the valley, so that's not true. I surprise people with
Richie,
that.
Richie might be very perceptive. Where does the time go? Let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
Another thing, you were, I know this is kind of a standard question, but because of the Golden Gals Got Wild and all that, you were one of USA's characters.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I was selected. It was actually kind of amazing. For USA Network in Vanity Fair, it was crazy. I had a billboard in Times Square with my face.
I remember that.
The NBC Universal building.
That was
like,
so cool.
Yeah, the 30 Rock building had a giant thing in my face.
Were you in New York? Did you go to New York and see it?
Yeah, no, they flew me out. Vanity Fair flew me. It was crazy. And it was like,
she posted it.
Yeah, it was
a couple years ago.
I don't miss her posts.
It was insane. No, it was the kind of thing where what happened was my friend Marla Rutherford is a very famous photographer, and she said, listen, come in for the shoot. You're not going to get it. We're shooting 1,000 people. They're only going to pick 7. You're not getting it. I was like, whatever. So I just went and had my photo taken. 2 weeks later, I get a call from my friend going, why are you on a billboard of my apartment? Like, what are you talking about? Send me the picture. And then she called me and she's like, oh, go pick up Vanity Fair. I open up. There I am next to Iggy Pop. What? Like, yeah, it was crazy. Amazing. And then it was on every single stop of the subway. It was my face. And so they had me go around and talk to high school students about, it was really funny because I'd be like, don't listen to your guidance counselor. I dropped out of class. Like, do whatever the fuck you want. Like, right. I do Naked Golden Girls. Right. Have a good time. And I'm sure they regretted choosing me after they put me out there in the world. But yeah.
Get a fecal implant. Have sex when you're old.
Exactly.
Dolphins.
Yeah, whatever. Also, have a good time, everybody.
Olivia, the artist, who painted Betty Page's most famous, she did a painting of you.
She's a good friend, and I curate her work, and that was a real honor, too, to be painted.
Right.
She was there, too, signing.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. You got quite a lot. And you, Richie, also, you played on Joey Ramone. He came out with, there was a posthumous album that came out a couple years ago, like 10 years after
his death. Second one, yeah.
And you played on that. How'd that come out?
That was great, you know. He had a bunch of different drummers. I think I played four or five songs. It's kind of hard listening to it because, you know, you got the headphones on, you listen to Joey sing, you know, it was all done. And then we laid the drums on top, you know. It was kind of sad.
How rough were these demos?
What do you mean?
I mean,
the demos were rough, but they really put it through the magic in the studio and made it, you know, sound nice.
And because Joey
Ramone.
It's
so funny, you had to listen to him sing.
Joey Ramone never had a bad word to say about you, except I think, one time he compared your songwriting to Phil Collins, but I think he meant that as a compliment.
Yeah. Well, he meant that I could produce and I could sing
drummer.
And I could play drums, do everything.
Right, and you did everything with the Ramones. And one question before we go, I told you, it goes by so fast.
That's it already?
I'm telling you, it goes by so fast.
It goes by
quick. We barely scratched the surface.
I didn't even
get to either one of your sex lives or anything like that, which I'm very curious about. But Tommy produced Too Tough to Die, the original drummer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How was it working with him?
Great. He loved me from the start. Just let me do my thing, you know.
Was there ever a time where you were drumming and he's like, no, let me show you how to do it, and he did
Never.
It?
Never. Nobody tells me anything like that. You know what to do. That was Marky. Marky had to, like, take lessons from Tommy to learn the beats, but,
You and Marky have beef?
No, just saying the truth.
Your hair looks better.
Well, you told me in the lobby.
That's so funny.
You told me in the lobby that when fans come up to you for things to sign, sometimes he covers your face.
Stuff on there. Yeah,
happened to me today.
I was in Brazil and the guy showed me. It was cute because he took another picture.
I wouldn't do it.
But he lifted the other picture. Marky drew like a cock in my mouth. You know, is it with the cock and balls? You see that in all the bathrooms? Is it because it's like easy to draw?
It is pretty easy. Drawing a vagina, that takes talent. Cock and balls, anybody can do that.
Right.
The thing is, you know, sometimes you get hair on there, sometimes you get hair on the balls.
Keith had it down.
Right. But, so he drew a cock and balls in your mouth? And you would never do that to some, you know, somebody said, hi, just someone with his name.
I can't get involved with that.
Right. And
I have enough problems just.
Why would you wig out?
Richie, if people want to get a hold of you, if people want to get the new album entitled, are you going to be touring more in South America?
Yeah, we go February 22nd.
What about here?
Wait, February 22nd, you're going to South America.
Yeah.
And you guys tour in the United States, maybe?
Middle of April. Yeah, I think I'm going to be in L.A. and San Diego and Long Beach, so I'm finally going to do another West Coast swing, so you could see me in April. You can find
the
dates.
Do you know where you're playing yet, here?
No.
But it's on RichieRamone.com.
RichieRamone.com or Richie Ramone Official on Facebook. You can see all the videos and all the fun things we do.
It's a great album. And thank you so much for being here. I can't believe
that. Yeah, the album they can get anywhere, you know.
Right.
Amazon, whatever. DC Jam Records.
Yeah, Pirate Bay, all that stuff. But you're a great guy. It's great to meet you. And I can't believe I met a Ramone. It's amazing. And I can't believe I met Lenora Claire a few years ago. And every time I see you, you light up a room, obviously.
Thank you.
And if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Oh, yeah, LenoraClaire.com, same with Instagram, Twitter, and my app comes out next week, so that'll be really cool.
Right.
If you want to do that.
And Josie Cat, just Google Josie,
J-O-S-I, Cat, K-A-T, and you'll find all the websites and stuff.
And I'm almost ready to cry because this is Josie's last night as official co-host.
Yeah.
But don't fret, next week she will be a guest along with her band Carrera, and a lot of hot, beautiful women.
Some all nudity our may happen,
and our new calls.
We do everything old school. We do fireworks. We've been banned from three clubs.
She's been banned from not just three clubs, a lot of clubs. I've been there a couple times when you've been banned.
We have girls on chains.
I don't remember the same titles, but we're going to go out on some Richie Ramone song. Lenora, Richie, Josie, everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye.
Good night, yeah. Dark Ringin'.